Well, I guess I wanted to start off, I guess, by talking about how you hooked up with Neon Hunter.
I first started performing actually with Nels Cline, and David Whittam had done a bunch of stuff. They've been working together for a long time, I guess, with Cryptogramophone Records. I don't exactly know how they crossed trails originally, but I think just through their interest in experimental music. And then David was running a TV show in Long Beach, a cable TV show, and he invited Nels and I down to perform. And then David and I and Matt hooked up and did some performances for his TV show, and things just sort of loped along like that.
Gotcha. Excellent. And so you've been doing this, do you call it performance painting? I don't want to get
I
it.
don't know what to call it. I've only been doing it for 30 some years, and I still haven't figured out what I'm doing or why I'm doing it, so I can't really help you on that.
Well, how did you get
It's
started?
sort of music interpretation, visual interpretation as an instrument. When it works well, there's a dialogue between the musicians and myself and the musicians. So there's an interpretation bi-directional interpretation going on in the performance, I guess would be the best way to say. And I don't know how that would be linked up as what do you call it, a discipline, but that's what happens when it's happening.
But you also have a background in traditional painting too, don't you?
I've done, I don't know. I've been a failure almost in every aspect of the performing arts, the best way to put it. I went to Chouinard's, which is an art school in the 60s in Los Angeles that was later bought by Disney and turned into CalArts. And then I went up to UC Berkeley and studied with a bunch of people up there. And it was just I just kind of fell forward in the direction of art, I guess you'd say.
So, and how did you come to discover this technique that you use now?
Well, bad luck, I guess you could say, like everything else in my life. I'd always been since my time at Chouinard's, been painting and drawing and jazz performances and poetry performances. My teachers, my instructors had always been sort of from the beatnik era. John Altoon was a major influence for me in the early 60s, and he was a major beat painter. And there was no really rigid categories of art then. I mean, jazz musicians and painters and everybody hung out a la mas. And so when I'd go to jazz clubs and stuff like that, or hang out in the back, or performances in studios, I'd always be sketching or painting. And so I never really thought that you actually were either a painter or a musician, or I never saw that landscape. And I was involved a little bit with music then, not seriously, but then in 81, 1981, I was having a show in Germany, and the Ger and Ronald Reagan was going to save Germany and the Germans from the Soviet Union by neutron bombing Germany, killing all the people but saving the buildings. Somehow the people in Germany got upset about that. They didn't think that was the right approach, and there was a huge march on Bonn while I was there for this art show. And I think it was one of the it was 300,000 people marched on Bonn, which was one of the largest political demonstrations to that time, to protest America's attitude about the Cold War and everything. And I was having dinner while that protest was going on with Werner Herzog and another sculptor, Werner Herzog being the film director.
Yes.
And we decided that we couldn't really stand to the side and and not become really active politically in committing ourselves to, you know, I mean, to the nature of the protests. And so we decided that we were going to go to Berlin and paint on the wall, as a, you know, because Werner was at the height of his sort of, I don't know, saving cinema at that time. He was lauded as the savior of real cinema. And so anyway, we thought we could make a statement that would be meaningful, rather than just being sort of, I don't know what you call, voyeurs at the real important issues of our time.
Sure.
But that fell through. Werner and I got in this insane argument, and the project fell apart before the dinner was over, and we both left. You never talk to each other again. Swearing we'd never talk to each other again. I hope that, I don't know if that's going to be true or not, but it's been that way for 30 years. But I actually decided that I had to go through with the project, and I went to Berlin, painted on the Berlin Wall in 1981. I was the first guy to paint on it, and I was arrested. I actually had to paint on the east side because the West Berlin Polizei wouldn't let me touch the wall. And so I had to jump over the wall into a section of East Germany by vetting that was sort of abandoned. And so I was actually in the eastern side of Berlin. And I painted a 150-foot mural. I had to stay in that area for 3 days because I couldn't leave. Because once I jumped back into the west side, I was arrested by the West Berlin police for leaving the west without a visa, they said. And flown out of Berlin, and wasn't allowed back. I couldn't get back into Berlin because Berlin at that time was isolated in the middle of East Germany for I think 4 years. And finally, I got back into Berlin in 86, I think, or 85 or 86, and then was arrested again by the East Berlin police, this time for performing with the East German students that were going to go help the Sandinistas in fight the Contras in El Salvador. Anyway, I was arrested again. It was a big, anyway, but the point is that I became politically active again. I was politically active when I was at Berkeley in the late 60s and early 70s, but then became totally frustrated when this country elected Nixon and just withdrew into my little studio and started painting. But then after this Berlin experience, I thought that it would be going into my studio would be not a life worth living. If I'm going to be on this planet, I can't stick my head in like an ostrich in the sand. So on my return, I had Sam Johnson, who was the last drummer with the Iron Butterfly, would come over to my studio and he would he'd perform. He bought like one of the first Moog synthesizers. He'd perform in my studio while I'd paint, and it was all in the studio. But on returning from Berlin, I decided I couldn't go in my studio again. I thought that wasn't the direction that I wanted to live. And we formed a punk band called Panic, which was Snake Pit, Zam, and myself. And we performed from 81 to 85 or 6. Doing the whole punk circuit in Southern California, which was really vital then, I think, and making very meaningful statements about what creativity and what expression was. And then that broke up. When MTV came out, the whole nature of the music industry changed, and it didn't seem to have the same value that it did when it was driven by the punk scene. So I withdrew again into my studio, and then later it was Nels Klein, who started a thing called New Music Mondays in the 90s, that he invited me. He'd been coming down when I was performing with Panic in the 80s when he was a kid. When Nels was a kid, was coming down and apparently hanging out at our performances. So when he started up his New Music Monday in the 90s, he invited me to come down and sit in with his Nels Klein trio. So I started doing that. And then he invited me. He was in a band called Banyan, which was driven by Stephen Perkins from Jane's Addiction and Mike Watt from the Minutemen. And Willie Waldman, the trumpet player from Memphis. And so in 99, I started playing with Banyan, performing with Banyan, and we performed together for like 10 years. I toured with Banyan. And then I started performing with Christoph Bull, who's a classical pipe organist, and started touring with him and doing philharmonics and stuff like that. So I guess that's kind of, in a nutshell, what a catastrophe my life's been, but the music's been great.
Well, the first time I saw you was with Banyan at Di Piazza's, and I was really struck by, I think what you were talking about before, by this sort of telepathic communication that you had with the group. It was really, I thought it was really amazing how the level of interaction and how integrated you were into the group. I thought that was really amazing.
Well, I mean, I think that when you're performing with musicians of that caliber, they're so in tune to their environment that they can't avoid, but they, matter of fact, that's the beauty of that kind of performance is expressing what's going on around you and relating to the other musicians. And I think it was second nature. It wasn't something that was intellectually perceived as being an objective. It was just how these musicians relate to what's happening during the performance, and then I'm sitting there on stage with them, so I become part of it, and vice versa. I basically walk in with no preconceived notions of what's going to happen, and then once the gun goes off, I kind of use that tabula rasa, blank mind attitude that just from the first note, I'm gonna let that paint my paintings, and then so it without coming in with the attitude that I'm gonna paint something, I have an objective, I'm sort of free to go wherever the music takes me, and I think the musicians also have that luxury.
Right. Do you have a clear recollection after a performance of what you've done?
No, not at all. Not a clue. Matter of fact, that's why I actually started. I started photographing my stuff because, being on the road in places like Idaho or Utah, sometimes in the South, I would get this. I'm afraid your stuff was not the kind of art that we like in our. Or the town fathers like in our community, and anywhere, I would never have any idea what they were talking about because they couldn't remember. I'd go into sort of a trance, and my paintings morph. So whatever's stuck on the end of the screen, or even at the end, I usually erase it. So I really can't I can't refer back to what they think was indecency or not of the community's values. I had to start photographing so I'd have a clue what they would be talking about. And eventually those photographs turned into prints. So even though all the art's destroyed, all the stuff during the performance is destroyed, now I have prints that came about by the fact is I didn't have any idea what had been transpired during the performance.
And also you, not that long ago, made a video, a DVD with Nels.
Right, right. Nels and I have a project, a duo called Stained Radiance, and Nels sort of spearheaded the production of a DVD on it.
And so, is that just one performance, sort of from start to finish?
Yeah, exactly. It was just a film of a live performance.
And so, when you watch that. Is it full of surprises for you?
know what to say. I haven't watched it. I don't know if I should say that. I've watched some of it. I can't really, you know, I really don't like to watch my stuff, to tell you the truth. I don't know what to say. I think I probably started watching and I just get depressed on, you know, on like what could have happened. I go into what could have happened, and that's not of any value.
Right.
In life, you know what I mean? The reflection on a performance is not a good thing, I don't think.
I understand. Because it's really about that moment, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into hindsight, and I would like to enjoy it, but I would like to reflect back. I think, but like Crap's last tape, Beckett's play, you know, maybe when I'm drooling on myself in some old folks' home, I'll be able to sit back and reflect on how I squandered my life.
Oh, well, you know, I think that the work that you do is really exciting, and for people who haven't seen it before, it's a kind of take on art that it's in a way it's sort of liberating for people. I think it actually has a really positive impact on folks when they see it, especially for the first time.
I think the most that people tell me the most productive impact it has is that the paintings are destroyed, and I think that people really are kind of caught off guard by that, because art is always considered so precious, and I think that sort of seems that people, especially who are sort of, I guess you'd say, naive painters or neophytes to the whole making art, or sort of didn't realize that it doesn't have to be you're not making a holy reliquary, you know, you're actually just you're just enjoying the journey. And I think that's kind of one of the things they walk away with, is that there is a journey to art that's really the most valuable thing. I don't know if that was the answer to your question, but
sure. Well, also too, that you don't necessarily have to commodify everything.
Yeah, it's not a product.
Right. So, now, are you working on any other new projects? I know that you continue to work with Nels, and I know you continue to work with Neon Hunter when they do shows. Are there any new things on the horizon for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, on the horizon. What is on the horizon? I have an art show right now at Robert Berman's gallery in Santa Monica. I'm in a group show of a lot of the artists from Juxtapose magazine, which is, I think, a very good show, even though the fact that I'm in it doesn't make it a good show. But the other artists in it, if anybody has a chance, I really think that they would enjoy this show. It's at Bergamon Station in Santa Monica at the Berman Gallery. And then Shepard Fairey has a wonderful exhibit of his the album covers that he designed, which is also at the Berman Gallery. So it's worth a trip to Santa Monica if your audience feels like seeing some really interesting stuff. So that's a show I'm in. Now I have another show that opens up in San Francisco on the 13th of my light boxes, which a lot of my art now is reflective of the performance paintings, which is done on a light box, but I've made actually oil paintings that are the oil paintings are done on Mylar, which is a translucent material, so they're put in light boxes which sort of mimic what happens on, not mimic what happens, but mimics what looks like the art on stage that I do.
Wow.
And I have a show in Bloomington, Indiana on the 22nd of painting. So I got a bunch of stuff in the fire.
And you're also doing a benefit performance too, is that correct?
There's a fundraiser for the victims of the tsunami, the Japan tsunami, if that's what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
in Hermosa Beach at Sangria on Sunday, which is with a great Indian musician named Urish. And Urish is a really interesting guy, a very, very sort of talented, brilliant trumpet player. So that's at Sangria's on Sunday at 4 o'clock, and everything's done is focused on raising funds for the victims of the tsunami in Japan. And there's a bunch more fundraisers coming up that are just being sort of established now. Yuka, Nels Klein's new wife or wife, she's Japanese, and she's putting a bunch of stuff together in New York. So there's a lot of things going on right now that are just being sort of organized,
right,
to, you know, in that direction. And so anyway, I'm you know, real happy to be participating in all that stuff.
That's great. I just have one really, I guess maybe a last question for you, and this is slightly off of what we've spoken about before, but I'm just kind of curious. What do you think about arts education in California?
Well, I think that actually the most interesting parts of art education are not at Cal Arts and at the big art schools or art institutes. I think they're actually kind of homegrown. I think there's a lot of stuff in the street that's going on. A lot of co-op galleries where people are just making art for the right attitude. You know, they're making art about their lives and about what they see around them. And I think that since the '60s, the art schools have really focused on art about art, and they forgot about the world that they live in. And there's been a, I think there's been a. I think it's been led down the wrong path, and you can see that. Pardon me, you can see that with the big blue chip painters that bring the high prices, that like Jeff Koons and Damien Hirst and all these big money tickets. When you look at the art, it's quite baffling why anybody would want to have it in their house or feel that it moves them. It's basically just about pushing numbers around, and it's and I think it's tragic for the young artist for these people to be used a yardstick as what's valuable in self-expression. So I think that if you can stay away from art about art and just follow what you feel personally, I think that that's the right path. I'm personally, and I think that that's happening on a grassroots level. So that's my feeling on it. And I don't want to sound bitter or anything, but I really think that the captains of culture have really betrayed what the real value of art is.